Hi folks, this is All Things Product with Petra Wille
and Teresa Torres.
And we're so happy you're here. Teresa, one of our listeners asked us a question. It's rare, but it happens, and we want more of the audience questions. So if you're listening to this podcast, keep them coming. We will try to answer your questions. So what was the question? The question was, we recorded an episode on the product versus the project operating model a while ago. And that's basically what sparked the idea of this listener to ask us, hey, is there or what is the difference in organizations that tend to fund projects versus organizations that tend to fund teams? So is there anything that you want to share with the audience, opinions, learning stories around this topic, funding projects versus funding teams?
Yeah, I get this question a lot because I'll start to teach teams at a company how to do continuous discovery. And then they run into this problem because in their annual planning, the way their annual planning worked is they funded specific projects. And now when they do their discovery, they're like, but I have to build this specific project. And so there's a clash. So what we see a lot of companies do is they start to move towards the product operating model, or they start to adopt continuous discovery. They change their funding model. They change from funding projects to funding teams. But that's not an easy transition. So let's just talk through funding and how funding works. And I'm not an accountant or a CFO. So like,
neither am I.
We're going to talk about this in like the basic level, right? So my understanding is that when a company decides to fund a project in the annual planning process, what the CFO is looking for is how much is this project going to cost? And then what's the ROI on that project? Is it a profitable project?
And of course, how long will it take?
Yeah, because that's part of how much will it cost, right?
Yeah.
So when we allocate money, when we say we're going to give 7 engineers and a product manager and a designer to this project, we know it's going to cost X dollars. And then we expect that project to return more than X dollars in revenue. And I think this is still like crazy science because nobody knows how long it's going to cost. It always takes longer. It always takes longer than we think. It always takes more people. We don't have any idea what the ROI is, but it's like a little model we can play with on paper. And it looks like we can fund projects that we think are going to be profitable. So the problem with this is we're deciding what to build at the time that we're funding it. Whereas with continuous discovery, we want to give our teams the freedom to discover what to build. So what a lot of companies do is they switch to funding teams, and we're just going to fund the team for the year, and we're going to give this team an outcome. Now, we can still do this.
Yeah, that's the important part, Teresa. We want to give them an outcome that they have to drive. That's not always the case in all organizations. Sometimes you just do step number one and not step
and
number
two. Okay, if you just do step number one, we don't know what the ROI is. And so CFOs freak out. What? I have to just pay for this team and I don't know what I'm going to get in a response. But if you fund a team and you give them an outcome, now you're telling the CFO, we're making a bet. If we fund this team, we're going to get X percent impact on our outcome. And our outcome, if we do a good job of defining our outcomes, have a line to revenue.
And ideally, we do not only one little outcome, what we have various releases or something like that that help drive the outcome so that the CFO early in the year gains some certainty that things are moving into the right direction.
Exactly, right? It's not we're just doing a big bang release and we're going to hope the outcome changes.
Please
We might as well have just funded a project. We're doing iterative development, trying to figure out how to impact the outcome.
And
what I like about this is it's a one-to-one replacement. Like instead of modeling the impact of a project, we're modeling the impact of a team on an outcome. And your CFO could probably make that transition. I think the challenge is like the day-to-day reality of this is the whole finance team, especially in a large company, is set up to like understand capital expenses and operating expenses all tied to a project. And so when we say conceptually, instead of funding a project, we're going to fund a team, We can all get that at this like 30,000 foot level, but the day-to-day work of the finance team just breaks across the board.
Yeah, but not necessarily, because oftentimes projects, so there are various settings where it's not that big of a problem. Some companies are good in doing smaller projects already, right? Mm-hmm. So they learned and understood that, hey, doing this 2-year, 600 people projects, maybe not so successful. So they already learn smaller teams and smaller acceptance gates or whatever they call it for their projects is better. So if this is already something that your company has learned or is working towards, then it gets easier to go to the team funding model, because then a team can inherit 2 to 3 of these projects, smaller projects, and it matches on paper, let's put it like that, and the team can still be tasked with an output. So that's one way how you could influence it. Pitch and advocate for smaller projects, smaller acceptance gates, and then you can muddle your way towards this team funding model, I think.
Yeah, I think the challenge is that like companies still have this ritual of we're doing an annual planning process to decide what to fund. And so like we don't want them in the annual planning process to fund 400 small projects. We want them to say we're going to fund a team. And so maybe like the transition from project to team funding is you look back at the previous year and you say, okay, we had projects and we had teams. Each team on average did 4 projects.
Yes. Yes. So there's weather planning.
And maybe it's even the idea of like the rock and the pebble and the sand. Like we might have this idea of projects and we're going to use that to understand potential profitability. And we think this team is going to do X projects with an average ROI of Y.
Yeah.
And that could be a stepping stone, right? But I think really,
definitely. Yeah.
Like at some point, as this is why, like, we can't just say the product operating model, oh, just your product teams change. No, your product teams change for sure, but so does your finance team. Like they have to change the way that they attribute expenses to revenue. Your sales team changes because they are not selling the next feature that's in the pipeline. They're selling the next problem your team is solving. And your marketing team is changing, right? Because they're not just marketing code releases, they're marketing customer outcomes.
Yeah.
So, but I think the finance one is particularly hard because sales and marketing get some exposure to discovery work and get some exposure to the product operating model. And like maybe your CFO gets exposure to that, but do your controllers and your accountants and your bookkeepers, like it really, I think everything in the finance hierarchy has to change to support this way of working. It's not always easy.
Yeah, and I saw product people, so more the IC level folks, being better to explaining the changes required to the finance team than product leadership, which is wild to some extent.
Yeah.
But oftentimes the IC level product people better understood their KPI trees, their driver trees, their numbers and the data. So for them, it's sometimes easier to win over the finance department or the controlling person in charge or whatever with the detailed numbers and dashboards that they have. And given that they have detailed numbers and dashboards, not the case for all the product people out there. But if you have some data and you can walk your finance rep through all of that, it's usually not that hard to win them over. Middle management is a bit of a challenge here. So product leadership sometimes does not understand how to speak the language of middle management in finance well. So they are usually the ones lost in translation. And that's a lot of work on the personal basis.
This is a lot of that like up and down the hierarchy problem I was referring to, right? Like I can sell the CFO like, hey, we can't predict the future. We're going to move to funding teams. Conceptually, we get it. But like when your bookkeeper is entering an expense and they have to attribute it to a project, they get stuck. They're like, I don't have a project to attribute this to. So I think one of the ways to help alleviate this is to really, it's that classic meet people where they are, right? Like We have to understand what are the finance systems in place that are geared around projects. And then what do we replace project with? So we don't have to change all the finance processes. It's just maybe we're calling a team a project. I know that's weird, but if we're funding a team instead of a project, we can tell that bookkeeper we have a project called Petra's team. Right? So
ideally, like, we don't call it Petra's team, by the way.
We
would call it like the product that Petra's working on, or the part of the value stream, or the objective that we're trying to drive.
Thank you for that. Because yes, absolutely. It's not Petra's team. But okay, so maybe it's the retention team, right?
Thank you.
And so like previously, we attributed it to the project that we thought would drive retention. And now we're going to attribute it to the retention team. Yeah. Or previously, we attributed it to the project that we thought was going to drive retention. And maybe the stepping stone is the customer problem we're solving.
Yeah.
And eventually, exactly. The outcome our team is driving.
And the thing is, finance usually doesn't mind. Because for
I don't
them,
think they care,
like,
what the project is.
No, they don't care. Because they're so used to enter project names that are named by Greek goddesses in their spreadsheets. Yeah. So if you now use team names, they usually don't care as long as it does not break their spreadsheet model, I'd say.
Yeah, although what's crazy, I think especially in large organizations, like they have all this infrastructure set up around projects.
Yeah,
and if we don't do the translation for them, we literally, like, day over day have these moments of like, yes, I have this expense. Where do I attribute it?
Yeah.
Or
that's true.
I'm rolling up a report to the CFO and there's all these things that span teams. Where do I attribute it to? Well, we used to have things that spanned projects, so it's not that different. But like, think in this language, in this world, they don't. So there's this translation piece that has to happen. And this is where I think, like, the CFO gets it. The CFO understands across the business and that's why they're a C-level executive. And then we have to make sure that CFO is doing the work in their own organization to translate this. And I wouldn't surprise me if we have CFOs that are good at transformations because they've done it over and over again.
And they are. We actually, at Product at Heart last year, we had a speaker. His name was Felix Fichtel. He is a CFO in an organization, and we invited him because we were like, okay, product conference, always just this product people on stage. So maybe we should, and we had a theme around money. So money talks was basically the theme that we had. So we thought, like, there should be a CFO talking to the product people about all the things that he would love to hear from them and the things they should actually be sharing or preparing, or the translation pieces that might be missing. And it was one of the highest rated talks in the entire conference because it really helped people to understand, like, ooh, this is actually the things that I could actually have a conversation about with my finance department or something like that. And that's a bit of user research as well. We always talk about stakeholders. So go make a friend in finance, I'd say.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, always whenever we're spanning a boundary in an organization, we have to make sure we have people that are both sides are stepping across that boundary, not just one or the other.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to add another layer of complexity to this. So I feel like oftentimes one of the ways we shift our funding is we go from funding projects to funding teams. I think there's another layer. I think David Bland, or maybe even Tristan Kroner, has written about this as well. This idea of, like, we don't have to fund the team for the year on the outcome. We actually can fund the team partially.
For the iteration. Yeah, for
and
the
then
iteration.
Depending on how they do, do we keep funding them? Now, I want to be clear. I don't mean if they don't perform, we're going to fire them. I mean, if they don't drive an outcome, we might change the outcome they work on.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And so that's this idea of this, like, venture capital model for funding a team. We fund a part of the product or an outcome or a customer problem for a period of time to see if we can actually have an impact. And then if we can't, we fund something else. Whereas in the project model, we didn't really do this. We decided at the year we're going to fund all these projects.
Yeah.
And then we just had to move things around and hope it all worked out when new projects came along.
Yeah.
If you get all the way to funding teams, now you can add this extra layer of complexity if we can fund based on uncertainty and fund based on actual outcomes and change our mind and have a little more flexibility.
Yeah, and that's actually so. But it requires a bit of, I don't know, flexibility and trial and error to some extent. I once worked for one of my clients, but I was basically in the interim product leadership role or product management role even at the time. And they worked with an agency who was doing all the engineering work. So all the engineers were basically hired from an agency. And the agency was actually running this model of funding per iteration, which I found super brave for an agency client relationship to say, like, hey, you just always give us money for the next iteration. I think we were at 4 weeks back at the time or something like that. And then we always had review meetings that actually made sense because then the entire team presented what they did. And then the client really decided if they want to fund this agency for another 4 weeks to work on the project. If not, not contract ended. And if we continued, then again, we just had a really thorough discussion about if the goals stay untouched, if we're still optimizing for the right things to solve on the customer side. So everybody was way more engaged in this kind of funding model. Obviously, they had more on the line, this agency, but it worked pretty well, and we continued to, or they continued to work in that in the end for 2-ish years.
Yeah, I think there's something you mentioned before we started recording that I think is really relevant here when we talk about boundary spanning. So like we have a product world, we have a product team that's really focused on the customer and building out the product. Maybe they're focused on driving a business outcome of like increasing revenue as part of that. What they rarely think about is their own team costs.
Oh,
Right?
yeah.
And
Oh,
then
how many
on the
coaching sessions I had about that, Teresa.
Yeah, and then we have a finance team where all they're thinking about is costs and return on investment and profitability. And so to bring these two worlds closer together, it's not just the CFO and the finance group that has to understand the product operating model.
I
We also
agree.
need product teams to better understand like a sprint costs us this much money. And we need to make sure over the course of the year, what we're building, we're returning not just that much money, but that much money with a multiplier. Because that's
Exactly.
what
We
our
usually
CFO is
talk at
expecting.
least 10x that startups and scale-ups are expecting from a product team. So that's at least my experience. So if your sprint costs, I don't know, 15K, 20K or euro per sprint, then you better need to make a plan that brings back 10 times more than that, because otherwise your CFO won't be happy. At least if we talk about basic software, digital products, that's usually what we see there. And we're not
And
talking the hockey stick companies.
this also helps with like I remember so many times in my time in my like career managing product people, like when setting outcomes, a lot of product managers want to think about it incrementally. Like this is the incremental impact I can have on the customer. But that often doesn't line up with what the finance side of the business needs, right? Like we can't improve a metric 3%. Like I get that it's hard to move the metric, but if we increase the metric only 3%, we're not actually covering our own costs. Like
Yeah,
it's
there is no
not,
sustainable business.
your team might as well not exist, right? And so like there's a little bit of this clash of like we have to provide a return on our costs, but to do that is really hard in the product world, right? And so both
Yeah, and
sides
sometimes
have to have this
attribution is
knowledge.
hard. Yeah,
What's that?
I agree. I was just like saying, and oftentimes attribution is hard.
Attribution is
So
super
it
hard.
Yeah, so it's hard to prove that the changes you made to the product that 10 teams are working on really made the difference that you were hoping for and actually helped the organization make so much money than promised. And that's not always possible, but I think that should not be an excuse for any product team to not know what the basic costs of running a sprint is, because it still gives you a ballpark. Or where you need to land with the stuff that you're adding.
I also think this is why, like, we hear a lot of stories of leaders, like big leaders of big successful companies, their mindset is like, okay, that's great, but how can we 10x it? Right? Like, we have to learn how to build this mindset and this skill of thinking bigger and going after harder outcomes. And a lot of it is because That's what gets the return on the cost of your team. And,
yeah, exactly.
And it's not just like, look, no business is going to be in business because they got a 1% return on each of their teams. It doesn't work, right? Like, no. First of all, you have a lot of parts of your business that don't bring in revenue. Your support team isn't, well, some support teams drive revenue, but for the most part, you have all these other enabling teams
yes.
that aren't revenue drivers.
They may be reducing cost, maybe.
Yeah, which is why your product team can't just pay for itself. It has to have a multiplier because we're paying for the whole business and we're paying for growth in the business and profitability in the business. And I think this is a piece where like finance and product clash a lot because finance doesn't fully appreciate how hard it is to drive exponential returns and product doesn't fully appreciate why we need to drive exponential returns.
That's actually a nice summary of where the problem lies, Teresa.
Yeah. All right. I don't know if we helped anybody in this episode, but hopefully it was at least.
Yeah, but let us know. Let us know. We read your comments. Thank you, Teresa.
Thanks, Petra.